call the meeting. I'd like to call the meeting of May 3rd, 2022 to order. Could we have a roll call, please?
Trustee Alcantara?
Present.
Trustee Stebbins? Trustee Stebbins has waved. She's there. Trustee Rivera?
Present.
Trustee Garcia? Trustee Brown?
Here.
Trustee Mathis? Trustee Blanchard?
Present.
Trustee Jennings?
Here. I'd like to ask Director of Student Activities, Shiloh Walker, to lead us this evening in the Pledge of Allegiance. Would everyone please mute their microphones?
Thank you so much, Trustee Jennings. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Pilar to lead us in the land acknowledgement tonight.
Okay. Good afternoon, Board President Charles Jennings, members of the board, Interim President Lisa Lawrence Aguilera, faculty, staff, students, and members of the community. We have a special reading of the land acknowledgement today. Our own Spanish instructor, Professor Ricardo Aguilar, has translated it into Spanish and will be reading it for the board for the first time. I will proceed by reading it in English. We hope that it can be translated into more languages as needed as we do outreach in our district.
Gracias. Reconocemos que San Joaquin de Alta College sirve a los estudiantes y a la comunidad en la tierra ancestral de los pueblos indígenas, incluidos los Yokuts, Plains Miwok, Patwin y Nitsenam. Esta tierra inseparable sigue y pertenece a los nativos americanos. Como invitados, reconocemos que nos beneficia vivir y trabajar en sus tierras y deseamos honrar, reconocer y respetar a los ancestros ancianos y parientes de los Yokuts, Plains Miwok, Patwin y Nitsenam, incluso mediante la afirmación de sus derechos soberanos como primeros pueblos. Seguimos agradecidos por la rica cultura, los idiomas, las contribuciones y el patrimonio de los pueblos de las primeras naciones que vivieron aquí y amaron aquí, que crecieron a sus familias aquí, que cuidaron la tierra y la vida aquí, que están enterrados en muchos lugares reconocidos y no reconocidos aquí, y que permanecen aquí a pesar de los actos de genocidio, asimilación y expulsión forzosa. Honrémoslos a ellos, a esta tierra y a la vida, con nuestros pensamientos, palabras y acciones en este lugar.
We acknowledge that San Joaquin Delta College serves students and the community on the unceded ancestral homeland of indigenous peoples, including the Yakuts, the Plains Miwok, Potwin, and the Nisenan. This land remains inseparable from its Aboriginal stewards. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland, and we wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Yakuts, Plains Miwok, Potwin, and Nisenan, including by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples. We remain grateful for the rich culture, languages, contributions, and heritage of the First Nation people who lived here, who loved here, who raised their families here, who cared for land and life here, who are buried in many marked and unmarked places here, and who remain here despite acts of genocide, assimilation, and forced removal. Let us honor them, this land, and all life in our thoughts, words, and actions in this place.
Thank you both very much. Item D, public comments regarding closed session item. Each comment will be restricted to 3 minutes with a multiple comments on a particular topic not exceeding 15. Do we have any public comments this evening?
Trustee Jennings, I have no public comments for closed session items. However, I do have public comments for later on in the agenda.
Thank you so much. At this point, I would like to adjourn to closed session to discuss conference with labor negotiators and our designated representatives. We're now adjourned to closed session. Thank you. Okay. All the trustees, with the exception of Trustee Garcia, were present during closed session. No action was taken and there's nothing to report. Public comments. Do we have any public comments this evening? Comments will be restricted to 3 minutes each for a total of 15 minutes on any one particular topic.
Yes, Trustee Jennings. The first public comment is from Elizabeth Maloney.
Dr. Maloney, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Dr. Jennings, Board of Trustees, Dr. Aguilera, Lawrenson, colleagues, and guests. I am speaking tonight as the SJDCTA president. I believe tonight you are going to hear from various faculty who are upset about the faculty hiring and granting of tenure that are listed in the consent items. First, let me start by bringing to everyone's attention that the fact that this situation was not created by the current executive leadership. They inherited the problem. The current executive leadership is working hard with the union in following California's education code, and working on corrective measures. I'm sure that you will hear concerns regarding a lack of transparency, faculty meeting minimum quals, properly conducted interviews, equity, and many other issues that I did not list. However, in regards to possible concerns about the faculty meeting minimum qualifications, Board Policy 7211 and the SJDCTA Collective Bargaining Agreement Article 33.3 have been correctly followed. Additionally, each faculty member participated in the interview process with an interview committee, which included a teaching demonstration. As a result, these faculty members were selected by their respective hiring committees for employment in the position which they were interviewed for. Transparency, or more specifically, lack of transparency will be mentioned. However, all of these positions are part of either an SJDCTA grievance and or legal process and are personnel matters in which specific details, circumstances, et cetera, cannot be discussed unless the individual themselves chooses to or grants permission. Please note that some of these concerns were filed by the union and not the individual faculty member. Presently, SJDCT is working with VPI Joe Gonzalez and Acting Superintendent Dr. Aguilera Lawrenson to update the hiring procedure, which will put in checks and balances to avoid having similar situations in the future. We have already brainstormed some ideas and are committed to working on this over the summer. In fact, one of the ideas has already been implemented. It has to do with assigning overload classes and adjunct loads. For overload, the SJDCTA Collective Bargaining Agreement Article 17.3.1 states that faculty members will be assigned a minimum of 5 units and at the district's discretion can go up to include 10 units. The district is flexing their discretion to limit assigned units to the minimum. This is being done mainly to assure full-time faculty meet load for the fall, but also to limit overload scheduling, which leads to class cancellations. In regards to the adjunct faculty, according to the SJDCBTA Collective Bargaining, Article 17.3.2.1, it states the district shall make every reasonable effort to honor the requested number of units and assignments per the survey. And then it gives some more information about following ED code, but it says additionally assignments may be offered when the district determines the additional units would be in the best interest of the district and student success. It also says in no case shall assigned loads exceed 67% of a full-time load in hours without approval of the appropriate vice president and concurrent notification to the SJDCA president. The district is now implementing a feature in the new ERP to lock out loads that exceed 67% since the CBA process was not being followed. There are many employees not happy with this new process, but we are working together to try to resolve the issues. I want to reassure everyone that the appropriate shared governance process and shared policies have been followed for these resolutions. And in the end, I want to encourage that the board to approve the two faculty consent items and to welcome and embrace the faculty members as new members of our MESTING team. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Can we have the next public comment, please?
Next public comment is from Steve Graham.
Mr. Graham, good evening.
Good evening there, Dr. Jennings. Good evening, Board of Trustee members, Dr. Lawrenson, administrators, faculty, staff, and students. It's with heavy heart I find myself making public comments at this Board of Trustees meeting. You've never seen me here before. On tonight's consent agenda, the Board of Trustees will be asked to approve the hire of 5 new full-time faculty. First off, my comments are not directed to or about any of the individuals who are being recommended for hire as full-time faculty. My comments are about how we got here and why we must circumvent all of our employment and tenure processes for full-time faculty, because high-level administrators who aren't here anymore don't know Ed Code, and unfortunately, some call this the Delta Way. A quick background on my perspective. I've been at Delta College in various positions over the past 32 years. I've always held Delta in high regard, like everybody else. One of the best days of my life was getting hired at Delta in 1990. I still remember how excited I was on the drive home. I couldn't believe I was going to be working at the premier community college in the state of California. Every day since then, I felt like the luckiest person in the world to work here. And why wouldn't I? The faculty, staff, middle managers pour their heart and souls into Delta. This isn't a job to them. This is a calling, a passion to serve people. To say they go above and beyond is an understatement. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen groundkeepers walk students to classes. I've watched police officers console. Actually, I saw a police officer console one of my students last semester that was assaulted in the bathroom. I've seen coaches transform athletes into student athletes, making those dreams come true. I've seen counselors, admissions, records, financial aid at EOP, all moving mountains to get students enrolled and keep them here. I've seen middle managers perform like jugglers on Cirque du Soleil. It's not easy keeping all those balls in the air while walking a tightrope into a headwind daily. And faculty, what can I say about faculty? They're simply the best at what they do. This is why it's so painful to see new leadership rotate in on a regular basis, and they never fail to mess this place up. The people we bring in are all polished up with their stories about relating to students, doing what's best for students, living the experience of our students, et cetera, et cetera. They've got these scripts down pretty good, but they have no idea what our campus culture is, who the students are that we serve, and probably most importantly, they don't know what the hell they're doing. This is not rocket science. Get the basics in place and then work on your signature pieces if you want to move on. Ed codes the basics. Every single administrator, including HR, instruction, student service, everybody needs to know Ed Code. Every policy and procedure needs to follow Ed Code. And when mistakes are made, systems need to be put in place to prevent future mistakes. This is very basic admin 101. So I don't know how it's possible we find ourselves in the same situation decade after decade. This is not the first time this has happened. Again, we're talking basics, not rocket science. Most of us whose life is Delta must deal with the fallout and long-term consequences when administrators mess up the basics and leave for what I call new opportunities. This wears on all of us. I know you can't do anything about the past, but you, the Board of Trustees, can shape the future. And that future is right now. Let's start getting leaders, not just the president we're bringing in, but leaders that can do what we need them to do, not the ones who say they can.
Thank you. Next public comment, please.
Next public comment is from Lisa Perez.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Hi, I'm Lisa Perez, and I'm a professor of computer science at this great institution, Delta. I was shocked by agenda items H and L that are hiring faculty for disciplines in which I am the senior member without any participation from discipline faculty. We did not do interviews or evaluations, and these positions are being evaluated as if that has happened. My issue is not with the actual individuals being hired, period, full stop. I'm concerned about the lack of process and transparency in the items put forth to the board. Item H, how did an emergency hire process that was for disciplines listed for candidates result in a full-time tenure track position being awarded without any discipline faculty input end up on the consent agenda? policy and procedure is very clear on the makeup of hiring committees for discipline positions and the evaluation process. In the item L header, it lists the source of funding as general fund, while the detail outlines three positions as being CARES Act. Are these positions funded by the general fund or CARES Act? Which? Item L clearly states that A, the employee has been evaluated in accordance with district evaluation standards and procedures. That has not happened. Discipline faculty have not evaluated these applicants. Since the positions were hired as one-year emergency hires, the board should thank the applicants for their service and terminate their contract. Create staff positions, follow the appropriate policies and procedures for full-time staff hire, or should table the agenda items and ask for a more formal review of what policy and procedures were followed to land us here and propose a different outcome. Students are ultimately the ones that are impacted by not hiring using a DEI lens. As many of you know, I'm handicapped and use a wheelchair around campus. Handicapped is one of the only groups not represented by a task force, as I may be the only campus member. Not vetting the applicant for applicable knowledge of the discipline, not seeing a teaching demonstration by the discipline's faculty or the applicant's qualifications, not doing class visits to evaluate student engagement and surveys for student satisfaction, etc. These items should be pulled and they should be re-examined. And in my opinion, the real answer is to terminate the one-year contract and then come up with a different solution. Thank you, board members, audience, for your attention to this very important issue. I hope that more information regarding how we got here and why the current unacceptable outcome has been presented. Excuse me?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Perez. Next public comment, please.
Next public comment is Daniel Fernandez.
Mr. Fernandez, good evening.
Hey, good evening. Greetings, President Jennings, Honorable Trustees, Dr. and Delta College community. As co-chair of the Chicanx Latinx Faculty Task Force, CLF is grounded on the belief that Delta College should have fair and equitable recruitment and selection practices for faculty. We hope that in the future, faculty hiring is based on equitable hiring and diversity practices, that the three equity task forces have painstakingly put into process since they've been into existence and first led by the Black Faculty Task Force. Unfortunately, this evening, the advancement of the faculty positions on the agenda shows a lack of commitment to breaking down the barriers of equity in hiring and disregard to AP 7120. Advancing these faculty to second year tenure positions takes a giant leap backward to putting diversity, equity, and inclusion at the forefront of the equity work we thought was advancing. Please note that we do not blame or harbor any ill will with our new faculty colleagues, nor our current executive leadership. This is not their fault. Still, we demand that the administration realize that we, as the Chicanx Latinx Faculty Task Force, will no longer be complacent and tolerant to hiring decisions that circumvent fair and equitable hiring practices, and hope to see future policies in place to ensure it does not happen again moving forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have another public comment on this topic?
Yes, next public comment is Nicole Sandoval.
Ms. Sandoval, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me. Good evening, trustees, acting superintendent, President Lawrence, and administrators, faculty, staff, students, and community. My name is Professor Nicole Sandoval. I teach in the Communication Studies Department. My public comment is in regards to the faculty personnel actions on tonight's consent agenda. Last Thursday at President's Council meeting, I was made aware that the Communication Studies Department would be acquiring a new full-time faculty member. To say that I felt blindsided is an understatement. Delta says we are transparent and we want better communication, but we continue to fail every time. To this day, not one person has reached out to the Communication Studies Department to share this news or meet with the department to discuss the situation. Because the district violated Ed Code, the Communication Studies Department is being forced to acquire a full-time faculty member that did not have to go through the hiring process to obtain this position. Faculty were completely removed from the hiring process. The person did not have to compete for this position. No rigor had to be proved. No equity practices were followed. The fallout from the district violation of Ed Code, from the direct violation of Ed Code, will weigh heavily on the department and campus for years to come. Full-time faculty are now forced to work with a faculty member that was never vetted for the next 20 years. Our part-time faculty, who work their tails off and had hoped that they too could someday ethically earn a well-deserved full-time faculty position in the department, now feel completely defeated by the entire system. Our department feels like we have been punched in the gut because of the district's gross incompetency. And sadly, nothing will change because violating Ed Code has happened before, and yet here we are again. Will the folks who are responsible for this be held accountable? How does forcing a department to acquire a new full-time faculty member who didn't ethically earn the right to hold the position not create a hostile work environment? We have faculty deep in equity work, and yet the district did not follow an equity process or practice. It is no wonder faculty become jaded, quit shared governance, and check out. Campus morale is low. Respect for the district continues to diminish. All of this is the Delta way. Please stop. It is exhausting. It is frustrating. It is disheartening. Please hear our voices. Let's make this right and stop with the Delta way. We've got to turn it around. It has to be positive when we say it, not negative. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. The board limits comments on one particular topic to 15 minutes. 15 minutes has expired on this topic. Ms. Hadbury, do we have comments on another topic?
I have two more people. However, they did not specifically let me know what topic they have a public comment on.
Okay, so I'll call on the first of those people. And if the topic is regarding the topic that's been discussed, I'm going to ask that you withhold your comments. So who is that person?
The next one, the topic that she gave me, it was Dr. Kathleen Bruce. And the topic she gave me was shared governance.
Dr. Bruce.
It's in terms of item L on the consent agenda. So.
Okay, thank you. And the other topic or the other comment?
The Robert? Other comment was from Jeff Tony.
Mr. Tony, is your comment regarding the hiring of faculty? Mr. Tony in the audience.
Sorry, my mic was up. Unfortunately, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to thank everyone for their comments this evening. Rest assured that the trustees have heard your comments and hopefully will be acting appropriately. Are there any other public comments this evening?
No, I have no more public comments.
Thank you very much. Then we're going to move to item 4A, changes in the agenda order. And I had one request to delete item 9C, which is one of the report items further on in the agenda. Are there any other requests from the trustees to change anything in the order of this evening? Trustee Rivera.
Yes, Mr. President. I'd like to pull item H and L for further discussion.
Are you talking?
Pull it from the agenda.
Consent H and consent L?
Yes. Okay. I want it pulled from the agenda.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Any other requests and change for agenda order tonight? Hearing none, then we're on now on to item 5A, recognitions. Mr. Breitler, good evening. How are you?
Well, thank you. Good evening, Dr. Jennings, Dr. Aguilera-Lawrenson, trustees, and colleagues. Happy to be here with you with some additional recognitions this evening. We have some faculty recognitions for you. First of all, we've been looking forward to having Coach Gina Johnson join us from the women's basketball program for several weeks now. As you all know, the team made yet another really tremendous postseason run this year, all the way to the state title game. But that's also really only the latest chapter in a really long and very successful story for this program under Coach Johnson. So you can see the numbers up on the screen there, just incredible. 700 plus career wins as a college coach, 19 straight postseason appearances, 13 conference championships, a 30-3 record this season, just unbelievable. And that's 2 years after another amazing run was cut short due to COVID. And then, of course, consider the number at the bottom there that you can see, a 97% transfer and graduation rate for student athletes in this program, dating back to 1997. So, obviously, congratulations to Coach Johnson, not just on another incredible run this year, but really on, just the legacy of success with this program that dates back, more than a quarter century. So, I know Coach Johnson was working with a recruit tonight. She was going to try to join us. Coach, were you able to log in? Are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Thank you for being here. Would you like to say anything?
I actually did want to say something, if I can, just not too long. First of all, I want to thank the members of the board for acknowledging the success of the women's basketball program and the kind words about myself. But I did want to say that, like many people on campus who have been teaching and coaching here or teaching here for so long, I've been here for 26 years as a teacher and a coach. And I just want to say that I really do have the best job in the world. And I want to be a positive comment today. I love working with these student athletes and I'm not burnt out. I love my job, but I wanted to say that success as a coach here at Delta or anywhere else can happen with hard work, but it cannot happen without a strong support system. And I want to acknowledge my athletic director, Tony Espinosa, and his athletic staff, because honestly, I couldn't be looking at going into my fourth decade of coaching without having the support that they give me and loving my job like I do, because I have him, his staff. And a shout out to our resource specialist, Izana Cruz, who helps our student athletes every day. They bring out such a positive force. And being here as long as I have, I can honestly say without them, other coaches will not be able to, you know, share this same ride and just see the positive influences that are being made to our student athletes, especially through COVID-19. So thank you again for your acknowledgement, but I wanted to also make sure I passed it on to the real reason why I'm able to be successful at Delta. It's been such a joy being here.
Thank you, Coach Johnson. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us. Really appreciate it. Thanks for coming. Also this evening, we'd like to recognize several other faculty members who earned awards, actually just this past weekend, I understand, from the Community College Association, which is the higher education affiliate of the California Teachers Association. These are statewide awards, and my understanding is that Delta actually claimed all of these awards this year, so that's remarkable. We have the Statewide Advocacy Award going to Professor Ricardo Aguilar. This award reflects a record of leadership and advocacy at the local level and is given to those who have made great efforts in advocating for their unions and members and have supported and really educated the community regarding the importance of unionization. This particular award, I understand, has only been awarded 3 times. So Professor Aguilar is the 4th person to get this award, so congratulations on that. The part-time faculty award goes to Dana De Mercurio. This award is in honor of David Milroy, a longtime faculty activist, and is awarded to faculty who have worked to improve working conditions for part-time faculty. The LGBTQ plus award goes to Kirsten Russell. This award is in honor of David Sanchez, CTA's first openly gay president, and recognizes faculty who have supported and promoted and educated our community college family regarding gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender issues. We have the BIPOC Ethnic Minority Award, which goes to Mario Moreno. This award is in honor of Marianne Pacheco, professor at Rio Hondo College, and is given to faculty who promote equal access and treatment for minorities on campus. And finally, the local chapters of CCA issue awards for any CCA or CTA members or staff persons who have made significant contributions to the local association and the teaching profession. And that award goes to Dr. Greg Gibson. So it sounds like a clean sweep for Delta faculty at the CCA Awards this year. Just wanted to acknowledge that and thank all of our faculty as well. This happens to be Day of the Teacher nationally, and wanted to recognize that, of course. And I know, I think at least several of our recipients or award recipients are here tonight. Did any of you want to make any comments if you're here?
I'd like to, Alex.
Please.
I just want to say I was able to accomplish some of the things that has been done this past year, in part due to the support of my colleagues. Dr. Jeff Topping has mentored me in teaching Site 2, which is statistical methods, which is a class that meets the math requirement for most majors. Dr. G. Links Kirkwood and I worked together on Psych 5, which is biological psychology, which is a lab science. And Dr. Maloney has been an enormous support, has mentored me in more ways than even she knows. And finally, want to give a shout out to Dr. Lisa Aguilera-Lawrenson. She's had incredibly effective leadership, used common sense and rolled up her sleeves and got things done. I really appreciate the fact that through the negotiation process, we were able to develop trust. She's demonstrated to me that she follows through with what she says and she's trustworthy, and I appreciate that. Thanks for the recognition.
Thank you, Dr. Gibson. Thanks for coming. Did anyone else want to say anything?
I do, if I may.
Please.
Well, first of all, blame Joe Gonzalez for this war. When I was here, when I was hired part-time, and he was doing my evaluation, part of it, I asked him, you know, I was a student at Delta College. By the way, I come from the heart of Delta College. And I asked him, you know, I was very involved in different clubs around campus, Mecha, Puente. And so, now as a faculty member, I ask him, you know, I want to do stuff. You know, I want to do something. And he said, well, join the union. And so that's why I say blame Joe Gonzalez for this award in a good way. The second person I want to recognize is Dr. Maloney for her leadership and for her mentorship throughout this years, me belonging to the union. And to be quite honest with you, this is a lot of weight on my shoulder, you know, carrying this statewide recognition for advocacy. It's an immense, you know, a way for me, but I would not just add this to my resume, right? Like someone earlier mentioned that some people just get awards and they just put it in the resume because they want to advance to the next level. With me, I really take it very serious when it comes to advocacy and social justice for our students and our community. So I promise that, you know, moving forward, I would advocate, I would keep advocating for our students. And I also would like to recognize Professor Mario Moreno. When I was a student, he was my professor. He was my mentor in a sense. He kept being my mentor. And you know, he's the one that told me just keep, you know, don't keep joining the union, you know, don't go away. We need new people to come in and join us. So I would like to recognize as well our students, because if it wasn't for them, I would not be here. Most of us, all of us would not be here. So recognize them as well. Our colleagues, thank you so much, everyone. I'm just going to stop there. But before I stop, I do have an ask to the board, if I may, that I know we're working in the strategic plan. And I would like to ask you guys, before you guys approve this, I want to see the equity minor honors program being included in the strategic plan, because I feel that it's necessary, and it's already changing students' lives around our campus. And I want to give kudos to Dr. Holden, because she has been a great ally and a great supporter of the equity minor honors program. And I'll stop there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Professor Aguilar. Congrats again. Did anyone else want to offer any comments?
I'd like to just say congratulations to all of you. We're very proud of you. Keep up the good work, and we look forward to more winners, award winners, next year from Delta.
Absolutely. Finally tonight, just briefly on a more somber note, we just want to acknowledge the district police department for assisting after the recent tragedy at Stagg High School. We were not involved in the initial response, but we did send units to Stagg later in the day to help with the law enforcement presence there. And this really is sort of a reminder that Delta is not an island, and that our district police, probably more often than we realize, have assisted other agencies, other organizations during their time of need. So thanks to Chief DiPiero and the entire department for always providing that community support when called upon. So with that, Trustee Jennings, that concludes recognitions for this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Breitler. On behalf of the board, I want to extend my congratulations to Professors Aguilar, DiMercurio, Russell, Moreno, and Gibson. Also, Delta PD, for their hard work and continued support in our community. And certainly, without fail, Coach Johnson, 700 wins in a career. That's pretty impressive. And I really want to congratulate you on your consistent hard work and success. And a 97% transfer rate is nothing to shake a stick at. So on behalf of the Board of Trustees, keep up the good work and go Mustangs. With that, we're on to the consent agenda. Am I in the right spot? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, in the consent agenda, and I think there was a request to pull items 6H and 6L. Are there any other items trustees would like pulled from the consent agenda? Hearing none, what's the pleasure of the board?
So moved.
Second.
It's a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Could we have a roll call, please?
Trustee Alcantara?
Yes.
Trustee Stebbins?
Yes.
Trustee Rivera?
Yes.
Trustee Garcia?
Yes.
Trustee Brown?
Yes.
Yeah.
Trustee yes. Mathis?
Yes.
Trustee Blanchard?
Yes.
Trustee Jennings?
Yes. Now we'll refer to item 6H. Trustee Rivera, you got a question?
Yes. My question is, I don't understand this item. I'm very concerned about it, listening to the faculty members. And as I read this, I was more confused than ever. And I need some answers. I need explanation as to why this, why did it happen? How did it happen? And what's it going to cost us?
Okay, I will.
Dr. Aguilar Lawrence.
Sure. I can provide background. I do want to say that I wasn't here when this happened, so this is my understanding of it. So I just want to be clear about that.
Thank you.
With the positions for the, and if the item could be scrolled up, that would be helpful so that I can address each one where I could see the full There we go. That's there we go. Helpful. Thank you. For the instructional design positions, those were originally budgeted for and hired using CARES funds initially, and then they were going to go onto the general fund, and it was actually put into the college budget. That was my understanding, and Dr. Maloney, I believe, could confirm that. Those positions were hired as one-year temp positions. The issue when it comes to Ed Code is you cannot hire positions for a one-year temp unless you're replacing somebody, but the positions did not exist yet. And therefore, those faculty members that were serving in those roles were going beyond the 67% and were basically working full-time for an entire year, which according to Ed Code means at that point that they have rights to a full-time position. And that applies to all of these positions. And if it's okay with you, Dr. Jennings, could I ask Dr. Maloney to add in or anything else? That
sure. Dr. Maloney, can you add to the comments?
Yes. So Dr. Aguilar-Lawrenson gave it. These are all part of grievances or legal settlements with the district, and that previous administration allowed for education code to be violated. And the current administration is following the Ed Code with what needs to happen once the Ed Code is violated. And so, but all of these people had it some type of an interview. They all had an interview. They've all had teaching demonstration. They've all gone through our fingerprinting, our background. All of that has happened. Maybe not in exactly what you see right here, but they have been vetted through an interview process. And this is this is part of a settlement agreement with the district and has legal repercussions if we don't continue to move forward.
The second part of the question was about the cost. These individuals are hired then essentially as if this item is approved, that they are full-time tenure track positions.
So
it's here at the campus.
As I understand it, if we don't hire these people, I mean, right now, these people are suing us?
If they were grievances filed on behalf of the district, I mean, on behalf of the union, for violation of Ed Code. So the union brought forward, some of these members did not bring this forward. These are brought forward on behalf of the union.
Okay. So
this is a settlement agreement because once you violate the process, the Ed Code, the outcome means that these people get to be placed on a 10-year track. And there was already an opening in post. This post position has already been included in the general fund. And the three CARES positions were already, even though they were CARES funding originally, when a previous president was here, they were already line itemed in to go move into permanent positions. So all of this has already been calculated into the general fund.
Okay, so when people made statements earlier about individuals not being vetted in the correct way, is that true? That the previous administration, I mean, that's what they did?
All had, so three of these positions were hired for distance education, and they all had interviews through distance education, did teaching demonstrations. Two of the people were hired in, they exceeded the 67% rule. Well, they've all exceeded the 67% rule because they've all been hired wrong, but they were interviewed and gave teaching demonstrations when they were hired for their adjunct positions.
How many people are we talking about?
Trustee Garcia, there are five people on the list that have been presented.
Okay. And thank you.
Maybe I can jump in just to interject. And Dr. Lawrence, and tell me if I'm wrong here. An employee can only be hired as a temporary faculty member if they're replacing an incumbent for a short period of time. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that if a faculty member exceeds 67% in 1 year, they have completed a full year of service to the district. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And if that faculty member serves 1 day into a second year contract, that faculty member is treated as a full-time faculty member in the second year. Is that correct?
I believe that to be correct. that part I would have to.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Correct. And so as a full-time faculty member working one day in a second year position, they become a second year contract member or second year employee in the eyes of the education code. Is that correct?
My understanding is that I want to make sure I understand your question, but my understanding is once they have completed one full year exceeding the 67% rule, basically if you're over 67%, you are working full time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even if that's 68%.
Yes. That's my understanding as well.
So then they've completed a full year. So at that point, they have worked for us as a full-time employee for the course of 1 year. Our adjuncts are allowed to work over the 67% rule only twice within six semesters, but not in the same academic year.
Right.
So that's what these people did. Who were their supervisors that allowed that to happen or let it happen, go over? I mean, if I'm the supervisor and I have an instructor under me and I'm a dean, how did you allow that to happen? That's your job to make sure that that doesn't happen.
I agree, and there are checks and balances in place, but those need to be tightened up, as Dr. Maloney has discussed and is being discussed with the VP of Instruction and myself, and also Dr. Cordova, because this also impacts student services as well. The 67% rule applies to all faculty.
I would like to address that. It came from a previous executive officer who told us that they were allowed to do this, and that person is no longer with the district. For four of these positions, that is the case.
Yeah, I just want to chime in here that we've been told that we have one employee that we need to address, and it's also my understanding that these did not occur on the incumbent's watch.
Right. I understand that part. I just, as a supervisor of certificated individuals, I don't know how that dean allowed that to happen. I really don't. I think that, in my opinion, and I'm just speaking as one trustee, is inexcusable. That's just my opinion. Not looking at the names. I'm just.
Okay, this has nothing to do with the individuals.
Right. It's just a situation that bothers me.
If I may. What I see here is that as these individuals were classified as 1 year temporary positions, they shouldn't have been classified in that way. Because when you're classified as a 1 year temp, then you're not violating the 67% rule. Are you with me?
Right.
Right? But they were classified as 1 year temps, which the dean would not be classifying them. That would really come from the job description and HR and the individuals who put those positions forward. If you're with me, okay?
Okay, gotcha.
So a dean would think, okay, we've got clearance for the 1 year temp.
Sure.
But the issue was they were classified as 1 year temps when they should not have been, because they were not replacing an existing position.
Right.
Okay. So that was where the Ed Code violation occurred.
Any other questions or comments from the trustees? Okay.
Yes.
Trustee
comment. For 2 days, I've gone through interviews for hiring presidents for the college, and there was talk about inclusiveness, non-racism. Was these concepts taken in consideration when the teachers were hired? What nationality are these employees?
Well, I don't know.
I can't speak to that because that those decisions were made when.
These things happened before any of the people we have with us were here. But you make a good point, Trustee Stebbins.
But it's also a personnel issue, and it's walking too close to a very.
We're on a tightrope here. Okay. Are there any other questions from the trustees regarding the positions? Yeah, trustee.
What are we going to do now to safeguard
that this doesn't happen again? What are we putting in place? Do we have to make new AP policies, board policies, so that, well, AP policies, so that this, so that we don't get caught with our pants down?
Well, can I comment? I don't know that we need to make policy that says we need to follow the law. The law is clear and the law is in place. What I would be more interested in is hearing potentially a report from Human Resources in the near future, and I'm thinking 60 days, to come up with a procedure that's going to ensure that this doesn't happen in the future. Because I think it was a comment was made earlier, people have seen this happen before, and in my affiliation with the 30 years with the district, I have seen this happen before, very rarely in instructional services, but it has happened, and I would hope that we can put some safeguards in place and the board can hear back in a reasonable amount of time to address the issue. That seem reasonable.
We have discussed some interventions. One of those would be that faculty that are beyond the 67% rule, meaning in a regular situation, this was an irregular situation. Right. But basically, anybody who's over that, that should be agendized on the board for the board to see.
And who would agendize that?
HR would agendize that.
But holding HR responsible sometimes doesn't work. Whereas a supervisor, as Trustee Rivera mentioned, that's your direct line that could be a better approach than depending on HR.
It would need to be everybody, basically all hands on deck, that anytime any faculty is going over the 67% rule in instruction or student services, that would need to be approved, brought to the board as an agenda item before it would be allowed to move forward. That currently does not happen. And that's why there, in my opinion, there's been a lack of oversight. And yep. I will say that in districts I've worked in previously, that is the standard practice.
Yeah. When I became an administrator 22 years ago, if I had done this, I wouldn't still be here. And things have slipped over the years. And again, I think the real solution to this is give the administration a reasonable period of time to come up with a solid process that's going to hold individuals accountable to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Well, because just listening to the staff members that normally don't speak, don't come and make public comments, tell us that, you know, it's bad for morale, and we don't need that. And I know that this happened in the past with the previous CEO.
They still want
more. Yeah, I was just going to say, following up on Trustee Rivera, that it's bad for morale, but it's also very bad to blame people who were only doing what they were told by those who aren't here anymore.
Understood. Dr. Maloney, you have a comment?
I'm working with VP Gonzalez and President Aguilar Lawrenson, and we're going to do some training on ed code, so that maybe if you don't have that training or you haven't been familiar, we have some ideas. If you could give us like 90 days to where we committed to work on this over the summer and to come up with multiple ways so we have checks and balances. And so I'm hoping the board will give us grace to work on some of the things. We have some trainings for all people, deans, HR, so we can go over the ed codes, go over what's important, what you should be looking for, and then to put in checks and balances. And like I said, use our ERP, use other people. So if you could give us some grace time, none of us wants to be in this position in the future.
Is that agreeable?
I agree with that. And I would also ask that you involve the people today that had the courage to come up and speak up about this.
Okay. So with that, any further questions from the trustees? Hearing none, I think it would be appropriate to agendize in the August meeting some kind of report that gives us 90 days, that gives you 90 days to, you know, take a step back and, you know, actually look at this objectively and come up with a good solid solution. So that's agreeable with everybody.
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll now move on to item six.
Excuse me, Charles. Yes. In order to meet our obligations under the settlement of the grievance, don't we have to pass this?
I believe so, yes.
Then I'll move that we do that.
There's a motion then to pass resolution 6H. Is there a second? I will second the motion. So there's a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? We have a roll call, please. Item 6H.
Trustee Alcantara.
Yes.
Trustee Stebbins.
Abstain.
Trustee Rivera.
No.
Trustee Garcia.
No.
Trustee Brown.
Yes.
Trustee Mathis.
Yes.
Trustee Blanchard.
We have a choice.
Not really.
No, not really.
Not really, no. Settlement. No. So you vote yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Trustee Blanchard votes yes.
Trustee Jennings?
I vote yes. So what's the vote? Is it?
Motion passes for.
Motion passes.
4 yes, 2 no, 1 abstention.
Okay.
And Trustee Alcantara said yes.
Thank you. Item 6L, advancement of contract faculty. Dr. Lawrenson, can you address this one?
Sure. This is the second half of it, which is again related to Ed Code, that because these individuals have completed 1 year full time, that they are now second year tenure track. And this is the part in the contract that addresses that item. And Dr. Maloney, I don't know if Charles,
it's also part of the grievance settlement. It's in the Ed Code. It's in the contract, but it also is part of the grievance settlement.
And as I understand this, Ed Code 87608
yes.
provides for the second year status correct. Of these employees.
That's correct.
I will also point out that if somebody were, let's say that these were 1 year temps and they were backfilling for an existing position and they applied for the position, received the position, they would be in their second year.
Right. Okay. Is there any discussion or is there a motion?
No moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second to advance the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 faculty to second year contracts. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to say that I will be voting no on this item as well, to be consistent with my vote on H.
Okay. We have a roll call, please.
Trustee Alcantara.
Abstain.
Trustee Stebbins.
Abstain.
Trustee Rivera.
No.
Trustee Garcia.
No.
Trustee Brown.
Yes.
Trustee Mathis.
Yes.
Trustee Blanchard?
Yes.
Trustee Jennings?
Yes. Motion passes, right?
Motion passes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Non-consent agenda, consideration to offer and implement the supplemental early retirement program.
So moved.
Second.
So motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, could we have a roll call, please?
Trustee Alcantara?
Yes.
Trustee Stebbins?
Yes.
Trustee Rivera?
Yes.
Trustee Garcia?
Yes.
Trustee Brown?
Yes.
Trustee Mathis?
Yes.
Trustee Blanchard?
Yes.
Trustee Jennings?
Yes. Item 8A, board policies out for comment. Administrative procedure 4025, philosophy and criteria for associate degree and general education. It's on the fast track. Mr. Gonzalez.
See you.
VP Gonzalez is out on a family matter right now, and I believe that David Thomas will be speaking to this item.
Oh, great. Mr. Thomas, good evening. Are you out there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Good evening, trustees, Dr. Aguilera Lawrenson, colleagues, members of the public. I'm here in capacity of chairperson of the public policies, the Policy and Procedures Review Committee. At this moment, we have AP 4025 that's out to comment. It is due, comments are due by May 5th. This is in regards to our associate degrees and the GE requirements, and this will also expand our GE pattern from 24 units to 27 units. The rationale for this was because we're trying to standardize the GE pattern for the CSU ethnic studies requirement that started by an assembly bill in 2020. This was presented at Academic Senate. There was a unanimous vote to accept it as it was written. In addition, we also have two proposals that were approved at President's Council, 4235.3 and .5, which is accepting CLEP and IB or international baccalaureate exam credits so we can award elective credit. And so that was also another alignment with state law in regards to allowing for that. So this is a win-win for our students in order to being able to have more options. And that is all I have.
Okay. And I realize this is administrative procedure and does not require board action. However, if we're increasing the general education pattern by 3 units, is the result of that to increase the associate degree by 3 units, or are 3 units being removed from other courses within the major?
So each program will have to look at that and review their program requirements. And this will be part of the curriculum process in reviewing this. But it does expand and add that 3-unit component for ethnic studies.
Okay.
So, and that was discussed at the Academic Senate. There was concern, but I think the program's individual will have to look at this to decide how they want to either change their unit base, but it will increase the units overall in the programs as written.
I'm curious because I know the associate degrees for transfer by law have a cap of 60 units, and I know that there are between the GE pattern and the major pattern, there are several degrees in that category that are up against the 60 unit cap. And by adding 3 additional units in general education, that could potentially put those transfer degrees out of compliance with state law. And that could get us into a situation similar to one we've discussed fairly recently in this meeting. And again, we need to comply with the law. Just a comment.
I can bring that back to the, I think the committees that will have to look at this, obviously it will be the administration, but also the GE committee will have to look at this. So we can bring it back to them.
I really appreciate it. I do, and it's my understanding too, that any changes in programs do in fact require board action. Right. So we would see those changes down the road at some point.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mr. Thomas. Are there any other questions or comments from the other trustees? Hearing none, and I think you covered 4235 as well as 4025. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So we're now on to reports. 9A, 1,000 internships, Dean Hepworth and Michelle Kastner, and Program Manager. Good evening.
Good evening. So good evening, President Jennings, trustees, Dr. Aguilera Lawrenson, our esteemed colleagues and guests. We are here tonight to provide an update on the 1,000 Internship Initiative. I am Danielle Hepworth, and I'm the Dean of Career Technical Education and Workforce Development. And with me tonight presenting is Michelle Kastner, the Program Manager of the Workforce Development Center. So next slide, please. So we want to start out with discussing our expected outcomes for this program, our objectives. As you know, there were funds committed to this, and we want to make sure that we are meeting those objectives. We are placing our students in internships that align with their area of study. Thus, we are able to provide them with a work experience that is crucial for their future employment. The employers and the students commit to that an agreed upon duration, and that includes a schedule of up to 20 hours a week and a time length of up to 12 weeks for their internship. Next slide. And I'm going to turn the rest of this over to Michelle Castanon to talk about our successes here.
Hi, good evening, Board of Trustees, Dr. Aguilera-Lawrenson and our Delta community. As we begin to look at our data over the 1,000 internship initiative, I would like to make sure that I want to recognize Elizabeth Waters, our workplace internship coordinator. Together, she and I have worked really hard in promoting the 1,000 internship initiative and all of the internal processing that is associated to it. So that way we are making a successful opportunity for our students and in creating work-based learning opportunities. So as you'll see here on the screen, I have been able to take a look at the last 11 months that we have been moving forward with our program. For 2001, we were able to make our first placement in late July and being able to successfully move forward in building up those numbers. So in August, you'll see we had 5 students offered and accept their workplace. September 3 students, October 11 students, November 10 students. And then even with finals approaching in December and students taking a break, we were actually able to continue to maintain and have numbers complete and students start in December. As we were able to move on into 2022, we were successful in getting 9 students onboarded, increased our numbers to February with 10, March 11. So you're able to see that we have been continuously able to increase our numbers. I will say with April, we did only have 2 members. However, with that being said, we were in the process of transitioning our program and our processing. And then as you look forward in May, currently we are only in day 3, but we actually already have 7 students who have accepted their offer and are ready to start. So we did hold those over from April. In the total data, we have offered and are currently having additional 9 students with a start date. We did have also an additional 10 students offered positions. However, they decided to not complete the processing or begin their internship for multiple reasonings. So in total at this point, as of date, we actually have a total of 90 students participating at this time. Next slide, please. So I want to take a look at our measurable metrics as well. So as we move forward with the presentation, I do also want to acknowledge that this program and the project has overall created many positive opportunities for our students and for our industry and mentorship. It has been a great addition to our commitment to our students and to our local community. The success itself has really been in matching more internships than Delta has been able to offer previously at this time. So as we look at the data, we actually have had 45 students complete their internship program since it started back in July. Of those students, we have 8 that have successfully transitioned into a permanent position. And with that, there are a few that either received a permanent position from their internship or utilized the experience from their opportunity in landing that permanent position within their field of study. As we look at the hours that have been completed of our interns, we have right under 8,500 hours completed. And that is through the month of March, since our payroll has not been updated for April to include the April hours. When we take a look at the breakdown of funding as we've been utilizing it, that's come through from Delta as well as San Joaquin County. Again, this is as of March.
you'll be able to see that the maximum funding that's really being utilized is going towards those wages of our students. And then in addition, you'll have the breakdown of the benefits and the workers' composition or compensation, I'm sorry, for a grand total of $136,180.27. For the program itself, at this time, we have 37 employers that are active work sites and are currently hosting our interns. Now, there have been additional work sites as well. Some of those positions are now closed and they have been completed, or unfortunately, they may have not have had any additional movement in finding a placement. So we are working with those employers in trying to reopen and find a success for them. Next slide, please. So as you will see here, there are a few of our dedicated partners to the 1,000 Internship Initiative. So again, we have had over 37, and you'll see a handful here. We have been graced with the opportunity to have diverse collaborations in a variety of workforce sectors. So you'll see agriculture, business and law, trade with advanced manufacturing, healthcare, STEM, information communication technology, and digital media. I would like to announce as well, our very first internship was with 111 Web Design, and they are the icon there in the corner with the VW bug. So he was really our founder in moving forward and helping promote this and the success that we were able to acknowledge to the rest of our partners based upon his internship with the students and being a success. Next slide, please. I do also want to acknowledge the journey that we've had since July of 2021 in moving this. We did have challenges, we did have bumps in the roads, but we were also able to overcome those and have a lot of achievements as well. So when we take a look at the challenges, we first started off, we did have a little bit of a slow start as we had to create the infrastructure, and we also had to implement the program, which involved multiple departments on campus, not just our own. We did have the employer of record with Delta College and the onboarding process, and that became a challenge because of the limited staff that was available, not only internally in my office, but across campus. One of the things that we also learned was the pre-employment application and screening process. It created sometimes a challenge and a barrier for students in reviewing and getting those applications turned back to us in a timely manner, as well as the additional requirements that are associated with becoming a Delta College employee. Another item that we did learn is our wages, they may not have been competitive enough with our current labor market demands that are going on. And more importantly, students really had many opportunities available, including the remote world that we were learning in, which was a cause really of us learning and adjusting due to COVID-19. But with the positive developments and again, overcoming our barriers, we did have our achievements. And that achievement, we started off with moving our wages from $15 an hour to $20 an hour as of April 1st. We were able to capitalize and get support that we needed with a new employer of record with the Career Catalysts, which is hosted by the Foundation for Colleges. We also took a look to see how we can really increase our number and opportunities for our students. So we began targeting and working directly with faculty to onboard students, specifically those students that already had an internship or an externship embedded in their academic program requirements or a volunteer, specifically those that were unpaid. So for those students to join us, they were able to really utilize and capitalize on their internships while gaining a $20 wage during their time frame with us. All in all, we have had 90 students placed again, with the first being late July 2021. We have 20 students that are currently working on campus with various departments on our campus. And I would like to say, even as we speak now, we have more joining us daily. So as I created this presentation and submitted it on Friday, between the past 3 days, I've actually received 3 different emails from faculty and programs who have been able to collect students who are interested in joining us and onboarding to participate in the internship program and gain mentorship. So I have right now an additional 25 students that we're going to be working and starting to engage with. Next slide, please. Oh, so that is, thank you. That is our program as we have been moving forward. We are excited to continue moving. We have funding available to reach through the end of December 2022. We hope to reach a total of at least 250 students and being able to see where our outcomes will be and how we can continue on this program at Delta College. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions from the trustees?
I have a question. So in total, how much have we spent?
So as of right now, with all of the funding that we have utilized, if you go back to, I believe, slide 4, we have used a grand total of $136,180.27.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I want to thank you for the report. Look forward to getting an update down the road. Good luck. Thanks for your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're on to item 9B, Basic Needs Center. Shayla Walker, Director of Student Activities, ASPG.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi.
Give me 1 second. I'm going to share my screen really fast in my presentation.
It's okay.
All right. Thank you for your patience, everyone. I'm actually presenting today with Dean Aguilar, but my name is Shayla Walker. I'm the Director of Student Activities. I'm excited to share with you information about our Basic Needs Center, which is going to be coming in the fall. Dean Aguilar, are you there?
Absolutely, Shayla.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
I'll absolutely provide us an introductory context. Good evening, Trustee Jennings, members of the board. Dr. Aguilera Lawrence, esteemed colleagues, welcome guests, and always, always our student scholars. It's always a pleasure to be with you here tonight. I do apologize for my attire. Normally, I would have a tie on and I would shave for you all, but this weekend, I accidentally sliced off the tip of my left thumb trying to slice cherry tomatoes. I'm okay. I didn't faint in the emergency room, but I am limited in my abilities. And so by all means, I appreciate your understanding and flexibility. We can continue on to the next slide. Director Walker and I are going to provide you a brief update on the exciting, soon to be formally launched Basic Needs Center. This is rooted in a partnership that started a few years back. Several of you were part of a task force, a basic needs task force that represented faculty, staff, students, managers, and trustee participation on occasion. This task force brought together the framework that basically served as the foundation for now the Basic Needs Center and the foundation to recommend moving forward in our new shared governance AP 2430, a basic needs subcommittee that would be part of the Student Success and Equity Shared Governance Committee. And we're excited about that opportunity. Several highlights for this respective task force that will soon ideally become a subcommittee. They drafted the language that was vetted through the process to establish a new job description for a hiring of a manager to oversee the Basic Needs Center. And Shayla is going to share with us that new manager that has started, I think it was 2 days ago. So we're excited to report on that. Additionally, we've been working with campus administration and we want to express our appreciation to their willingness to work with us in our proposals that we submitted. Requesting HERF and CARES funds to support a couple of proposals, in particular, the Basic Needs Center and some of our infrastructure and some of our programs and services to support the launch. We're excited to say one of the results of some survey information that we received from our students was a basic need in getting some laundry clean. So we are working with an MOU with several of our colleagues. You will be receiving it shortly in partnership with Loads of Hope to launch a pilot initiative this fall to bring laundry service to the district for our students that will be administered through the Basic Needs Center. We anticipate this pilot to be successful, and we'll be exploring how to expand that service further. I do want to give a shout out, though, to my colleagues before we move on in athletics. There was a point we were exploring. Daryl and Tony, thank you for this opportunity to at least engage in the conversation. Well, we are going to explore a partnership with athletics to utilize their washing machines to support our students. But there were some complexities due to access and scheduling, but they were at least willing to sit down and extend that conversation. So I need to acknowledge them. One of the other things that this task force did was successfully identify a location where we will house this basic needs center. And we'll be sharing that in the near slides that are forthcoming with those details. But as we move on in this presentation, I want to inform the folks that as you saw in that previous photo and you see in these two photos, key and core to the basic needs center is our students. Very student-centered, very equity-minded, very dignified in establishing that sort of guiding principle in addressing basic needs of our students. It is a challenge for anybody to have to go hungry, to be uncertain where they're going to lay their head at night, how they're going to get to and from school, how may they pay a bill. So this is the beauty of what we've established as a district, and kudos to us for launching this basic needs center. It's important to recognize that we are in compliance with Assembly Bill 132 that put forth the requirement to have a center and a manager established by July 1st, 2022. Again, kudos to our district. Our manager has been hired. The center has been established, and we're working on the infrastructure with a ribbon cutting ceremony that we look forward to seeing many of you there. It will provide a single point of contact for students to access basic needs, as I alluded to, whether it's food insecurity, partnering with our food pantry that will be under the basic needs administration, whether it's housing insecurity, whether it's fulfilling maybe just help to get a flat tire or a bus pass or whatever it is we can provide, laundry, or maybe just somebody to sit down and talk to in a safe, clean, well-lighted place. And I'll make reference to my English class in citing that particular poem. The Basic Needs Center will connect students to off-campus housing, food, mental behavioral health services, and of course, basic needs as we define them, as we learn from our students. So on that note, I want to turn it over to my esteemed colleague, Director Shayla Walker, who will take us through the remainder of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dean Aguilar. As many of you know, or may not know, that we have been a champion in my area of basic needs, starting with the food pantry. So it's extremely exciting to build upon what we've already established at our college. So I wanted to share with you some of the base funding that for the Basic Needs Center is coming from the Chancellor's Office to provide staff and support and the services that we anticipate providing. Some of the services we hope to provide for students in the center is connecting them with housing assistance and at outside agencies. We also want to offer food, transportation, technology, school supplies, laundry service, as Dean Aguilar had mentioned. And we want this to be a one-stop shop for students, all basic needs support. We also provide CalFresh application assistance currently. We have outreach ambassadors who assist students one-on-one with the application process for CalFresh. So those students would be housed to support other students who are filling out the application in the Basic Needs Center. Creating these partnerships is going to be really crucial for the project manager. We want to be able to bring our outside agencies into the center to do presentations and workshops with our students, have storage space for our students, and also the importance of collecting data to assess really how well we are serving students in their basic needs by using MIS tracking. And then also developing programs and services that's data informed. So the more information and assessments we give students, then that'll be able to provide us with the services and support we need to give back to students. So staffing, I'm excited to announce that Ms. Anna Vegas is our new project manager for Basic Needs Center, previously a student activities coordinator, now serving as a project manager. Her background is extensive in social work, case management, and working at several different county agencies. So we're really excited to have her on our campus to serve in this capacity. She will be overseeing our Basic Needs Center. She'll be serving as the homeless liaison for the district, also overseeing our CalFresh outreach program on campus, really playing an integral part in establishing partnerships with our community agencies to connect students with services that we don't offer, and supporting with the student food pantry, providing emergency assistance to students in need. This is really critical thing that we want to be able to provide students, whether it's a gas card, whether it's even paying a PG&E bill, collaborating with the foundation for fundraising support for the center, and then also coordinating this fall, as Dean Aguilar had mentioned, the laundry service that's going to be offering to students free of charge on our campus in the fall. Some activities and some things that we're excited about in the future is hiring an administrative assistant to support not only the function of the Basic Needs Center, but also the function of the employment resource programs that is co-located with our center, overseeing our CalFresh ambassador program and building that up more. And then also building up our wellness ambassadors program that we're also going to be establishing soon. So we are located, the Basic Needs Center is located in Danner 202. It's again, as I mentioned, it's a shared space with the Empowerment Resource Program. It's adjacent from the Veterans Resource Center and Pride Center. So it's where the touring lab used to be. And we are going to have a soft launch in March of 2022 this month. We'll be offering virtual services and then also in-person services, as mentioned here. But the exciting thing is, and some of you, as you can see the photo here, see Trustee Brown and Trustee Rivera at the student food pantry opening. We're going to have hopefully our grand opening, and we will, in the fall 2022 of our Basic Needs Center. So I anticipate and I hope you all will be able to attend because it's really exciting. It's a community center and it's a community event. We hope that you all will be able to attend to support our students. And then the next slides are going to show you kind of visually what we anticipate the design of the Basic Needs Center to look like. So this is kind of a bird's eye view of the center here, just a few photos and some different angles of the center. We have some tables and some lounge spaces and some computers for students. We'll also have space for our community partners as well. And just going through these kind of quickly here. Okay, that's it. Do we have any questions at this time? I'm super excited about this.
Thank you. Any questions from trustees? Trustee
yes,
Blanchard.
Yes, please. Do we partner with Salvation Army or food shelters so that our students could get food directly weekly from these organizations?
So we actually do have a partnership established with Second Harvest. However, it's for our food pantry. So we purchase food for our food pantry at 19 cents per pound. But part of my goal for this is to establish more ongoing partnerships with different agencies. So part of the role of the project manager will be identifying different partnerships to create more sustainable support for students outside of just Delta College. So we definitely are planning to explore different partnerships with Salvation Army and other agencies that we identify as key players to be able to support and connect students with.
If I might add to that, I believe that was Trustee Blanchard's question. Is that you, Trustee Blanchard?
Yes.
Always please. Excellent questions. Thank you. Let me add to what Shayla shared. We're also partnering with community medical centers that is staffing our Delta College Health Center. And April Cox, as the manager, visited the food pantry, and she too has a network in the community. So we'll begin to have formal conversations to improve the food offerings, if you will, in partnerships with local agencies. So that's one area. Additionally, we're excited that I believe a recent presentation and approval by this board is to repurpose some of the land on our district where the grapevines are, vineyards are, to have a garden there in partnership with our ag program and the Manteca Farm and the food pantry to possibly get some fresh fruits and vegetables in the near future. So that being said, once the subcommittee is approved, hopefully as part of SSC, the task of that committee is going to be to continue to follow up with community partnerships to ensure that we have fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, and food as possible, fully stocking that pantry. So thank you for that question. It is something we are working on a daily basis.
I would suggest that you go to the Port of Stockton because they have land that we could use for free, and they'll even provide the water and the fertilizer to grow your fruit, because we've been doing it for the South Stockton neighborhood, and they're giving it up. So you might make an appointment with the Port of Stockton director and ask if we could farm on port land.
Thank you, Trustee Blanchard. I'm sure that is something that President Aguilera Lawrence will take down for larger conversations with our, possibly our ag department, some of our faculty in a larger conversation. But if we can somehow connect, that's a wonderful opportunity. Thank you.
And one other recommendation. They have neckties for sale. You just clip it on now.
She's getting on me too.
That's my new comments. Thumbs up.
Any other comments from the trustees? Yeah, Trustee Rivera.
I do know I get several calls every couple of months with the Concilio, and I know the Concilio has come and delivered food, so we'll keep that train coming too.
Absolutely, Trustee Rivera. El Concilio, Catholic Charities, our local nonprofits. The challenge has been, as we all know, operating in the pandemic has limited some of the interactions and back and forth, but these are all great partners and partnerships that we want to be sure to include as possible participants in our shared governance committees. As we know, having community members, representatives is also an opportunity. So we'll be exploring that as well. Thank you, Trustee Rivera.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Hearing no further questions, thank you both for your presentation tonight. It's very enlightening. Keep up the good work. Next item is item 9D, strategic plan update. Dean Akers, how are you?
I'm well. Good evening, Dr. Jennings, trustees, Dr. Aguilera-Lawrenson. I'm happy to be here again to talk with you about the strategic plan. Today is your official first read of the strategic plan, and I'll go ahead and show you the timeline just so you get an idea of where we've been and where we're at. And then really, since I came the last two times to show you the full draft, I'll just show you a little bit, very small things that were changed in the draft since the last time you saw it, and see if you have any input since you've had a couple of weeks now to review the draft. And then we can take those for consideration or move forward to the next read at your next meeting as well. So let me go ahead and share my screen to give you an update on our timeline as things are moving quickly as we're going through the shared governance and constituency leads. I cannot believe it's May. This is the second half of spring, and you may recall seeing this over the last couple of meetings, but we're actually all the way down here now, where you can see many of the shared governance committees and constituency groups have at least had a first read. And we've also received many votes of support, meaning that these shared governance committees have taken action on the current draft of the strategic plan, recommending that President's Council forward it on to you as the Board of Trustees for adoption. We do, as you can see, after this first reading today, tomorrow we have Academic Senate, And then next week we have planning and budget, CTA and President's Council for the second reads. And so we are hoping to receive votes of support from those groups as well, moving forward to your second read and hopeful adoption on May 17th. I will say at policies and procedures, what you'll see also coming next time, I thought that the timing was going to align perfectly, but I think it's going to be staggered a little bit. Board policies 1200 and 1201, which are the mission statement and vision statement, were moved forward to President's Council at the last policies and procedures committee meeting. And you'll see, when I show you the draft, the changes that were made to those based on comments that were submitted to policies and procedures. But with the policies and procedures process, you'll see those come through, I believe, at your next meeting for a first read, and then the second read and adoption of those would come after that. So again, I was hoping that it would be at exactly the same time, but just through due to the processes, it's going to be a little bit staggered. Are there any questions or comments from the board on the process before I move over to the draft?
Good.
Okay. Great. So here on the draft, I'll just skip forward to the mission and vision statement, where you can see Dr. Brown, your comment I submitted on your behalf for the changing of community to community was accepted by the Policies and Procedures Review Committee. So it now reads, we actively and continuously strive to be a student-centered, anti-racist, equity-focused college that serves the educational and economic development needs of our communities. So the Policies and Procedures Committee did agree with your sentiment of including the many communities that we serve. And so that's the version that will be moved forward, that has moved forward now to President's Council. And then in the vision statement, it was agreed to make every student into our students. And so that's what's going to be moving forward in the vision statement as well. The only other change that was made in the draft since you last saw it at your last meeting was here under basic needs, which very timely that you had the Basic Needs Center presentation. In both the open forum and recently in an ASDC meeting, the issue of transportation insecurity came up. So we did not assess that in the national survey that we did previously. And so we added this statement here below, which of course, when we adjust this with marketing and make it much prettier with infographics, it will be, you know, elevated up. But because we didn't assess that previously, we are making sure to note here that we will inquire about transportation insecurity, which is an issue that's come up multiple times by our college community. In ASDC, it was brought up about just gas prices and coming to campus for in-person classes. Also challenge students maybe not wanting to ride the bus due to COVID as well. And so there are many transportation issues out there right now that are being raised. And so we wanted to make sure to include that in the draft. So
I have a question here.
Yes.
I hate to add something or talk about something that's not included, but when we're looking at all the areas that students need support, the digital divide comes to mind. And that certainly came up during COVID, that not only are we talking about hardware and software, but we're also talking about broadband, bandwidth. And, you know, our students were driving, you know, were sitting in cars in our parking lots to use Wi-Fi.
Right.
And we can't just pretend that's going to go away now.
Yeah, very good point, Dr. Brown.
I have a comment. Is it possible to include the request of Professor
Aguilar?
Yes. Regarding the equity-minded honors program?
Sure. So I'll speak a little bit about that. And thank you to Professor Aguilar for he's brought it up in a couple of venues so far. And actually, since then, I haven't been able to meet with the constituency leads in cabinet because this week we didn't meet due to the presidential forums.
But one of the main response that we've been providing, especially not just that program, but other programs, is that we're actually not listing specific programs at the high level in the strategic plan. We're really thinking forward to the implementation and including those more as tactics or actions. So similar to how we have learning communities, we have the Equity Minded Honors Program, we have our Faculty Equity Training Academy, just to name three, right? But there are many programs that we have that would be supportive of the strategic plan strategies that would come more as tactics. And that would come as the next step after adoption of the strategic plan as we look toward implementation. I will also say that when you move down to that implementation piece, let me just move here, you can see how we're going to want to make sure that we identify those things and that we also show who's responsible, right? So for the Equity Minded Honors Program, for example, there is a coordinator, which is Professor Aguilar. So that would be identified as this is the person that is leading that program. What are the timelines for implementation? What are all of the different things that we're doing for each of these actions? With that one specifically as well, that is a board policy and administrative procedure that you recently approved. And so that is instilled in our policies and procedures with the coordinator assigned. So I wouldn't be too worried about it being at this high level in the strategic plan because that would come later in the tactics.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts or input from the board now that you
have? I just have a very basic question. How many pages is your strategic plan?
That is a great question. I'm proud to say that it is only 17 pages, including the cover sheet, table of contents, and the process pages. So really brief, actually.
Because when it's too long and repetitive, it's a waste of staff time and waste of our time.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And that was very much one of the intentions we had when we set out on the strategic planning was to make it brief. We also intend, and I'll just show you this page here, to make it so that the strategic goals and objectives, at least, and mission and vision statement are able to be on one page. So I'm also working with marketing on a one-pager that can be placed as posters, or they can be, some colleges have them at what they call placemats, right? So it's easy to grab, easy to refer to. We would have common knowledge. That's also why there's only three strategic goals with objectives within. So we're really trying to keep this at the very highest level, very structured and also brief, so that we're able to really know what our goals are and get behind them together as an institution.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the trustees? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Where are we now? Upcoming reports. Here's the list of upcoming reports. It looks like we're calendared through the end of the month. And we'll continue working on this. If any of the trustees have any requests, please forward them to Dr. Aguilera Lawrenson or bring them up now.
Okay, I will. The exit interviews. We were at a workshop over at the CCLC conference, mm-hmm. and exit interviews was a hot topic in terms of employment and people leaving the district, SERPs, etc. So I would like to see our exit interview topic moved up, if at all possible. Sometime maybe early summer or midsummer.
Yeah,
that's all.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. We'll consider that. I did not want to put that pressure on HR at this moment when we're focused on hiring. So, but that's why we postponed it a little bit. But yes, we will try to put it as soon as possible this summer.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, trustees? Okay. Hearing nothing. Reports from the constituent groups. We'll start with the trustees. Trustee Alcantara. Anything you'd like to make a comment on this evening?
No comments for tonight.
Okay. Trustee Brown.
Yes, I'd like to thank everyone for the reports and also to congratulate the faculty members who received awards, and especially Coach Gina Johnson. My daughter has enjoyed going to the women's basketball games, and she enjoyed watching the champion games that weekend that they were televised. I think that it takes a great coach to not just talk about wins and losses, but about the number, the percentage of students who graduate, and in our case, move on to a four-year school. That's truly, in my mind, a sign of greatness, and one that very few coaches dare to do. That's it for me.
Thank you. Trustee Stebbins.
Two candidates, they were both magnificent, and they're both women of color. And I applaud this board and the consultants for having the decency and the common sense to advance these two people. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Trustee Mathis.
Nothing for me tonight, but thank you all for some wonderful reports.
Trustee Rivera.
Thank you for the reports. Congratulations on the recipients of the award. And I'll report on the conference at the next board meeting. Thank you.
Trustee Garcia.
I would like to thank everybody for their great reports tonight, especially my brother with the sore finger. I think that's he has got to take care of himself. Today was a great day to see everybody, and I wish all of us good health.
Thank you so much, Trustee Blanchard.
Thank you, Chair. I know how important the PE classes are, because I remember when I was working, I always get all the football players because they want to be sure they pass so they can continue to play football. So the basketball team is wonderful news. 95%, 97% transfer or graduate. And I want to congratulate the coaches and all the involved staff with the basketball team and football, golf, whatever the PE classes are. They're just wonderful for our young people and keeps them out of trouble too. Congratulations, of course, to the CCA awardees. You make Delta proud, and we sure need that more and more. So thank you. And I enjoyed the internship report. I think internship is valuable not only for business people, but valuable more so for our students, because eventually they'll get a job from internship. So we appreciate the internship program and the monitoring of it. I like to see more interns placed, hopefully, so that we're utilizing the program and the money. Otherwise, we may lose it. And thank you for strategic report against Tina, because I know you'll put a lot of time in the language itself and trying to compromise with a lot of demands from all sides. So thank you, everyone, for your reports.
Thank you. And I have no comments this evening. Comments from the Academic Senate.
Good evening, Board of Trustees, Executive Leadership Team, and community members. I apologize for having my camera off tonight. I unfortunately came down with COVID, so I'm coming to you from my bed. I'm going to keep my report short and sweet. In our last meeting, we had a robust discussion about our high flex courses led by our high flex in-house expert, Adriana Broger. She reported on her experiences teaching high flex classes, and those are the classes that were taught with the option to attend in person or to attend online. She also has developed additional training for faculty members, and this has been a very labor-intensive endeavor, both in developing the classes as well as developing the training. So I'd like to publicly thank her for her work. In our discussion that we had around resource specialists, we realized that our success team roles and responsibilities and guided pathways need to be further defined. Specifically, we came up with the idea of surveying students to see how they're using resource specialists and what else and other services students still need help with. And we're hoping to grow this discussion, not just in Senate, but across campus wide, to move our success teams and guided pathways forward to best help our students. And tomorrow is our final meeting of the semester, where we'll be discussing community education, strategic planning, and our end of the year reports. That's all I have for tonight. Thank you.
Becky, get well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Comments from the Classified Senate?
No comments tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments from the California School Employees Association? Not hearing anything. Comments from the Management Senate?
Good evening, Dr. Jennings, trustees, Dr. Aguilar, Lawrenson, our colleagues and guests. I want to start out just by saying thank you to everyone who was able to attend the CTE certificate ceremony last evening. It was, you know, one of our first face-to-face big celebration events and for this year, and we're very grateful for everybody who was able to attend. It was a great success. And we were very grateful for the opportunity to recognize and celebrate those students that have completed their CTE certificates. We'd also like to congratulate those that were recognized this evening, both Coach Gina Johnson for her great work and for the awardees for their great work on our campus. And then finally, I just want to spend just a moment to thank the board members, express our appreciation for your ongoing diligence in your search for our new president. I know that it's a tremendous job, and we appreciate all of your work as you are working through that, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Comments from student government. Not hearing anything. Comments from the California Teachers Association.
Dr. Jennings, Board of Trustees, Dr. Aguilera, Lawrence, and colleagues and guests. Ditto what Danielle Hepburn said about the CT event. It was one, exciting to see students in person. I've seen students in person for a while, but it was great to see them there, to see their families, to see their enthusiasm, their excitement, and most importantly, their pride. Those certificates make a difference in their lives. And that award ceremony also made a difference. And thank you to the internships, because many of our students through the internships, as we heard from the speaker last night, are getting hired. And that is making a real difference. And so thanks to everybody for that effort. And it was great to see all of that. Thank you to all the award winners tonight. That was exciting. To Gina and all the CCA award winners. That's awesome. To the Board of Trustees, I want to thank you for accepting the supplemental retirement plan. While it's going to be sad to lose some of our colleagues, I appreciate that. And they're all doing the happy dance. You can't see them, but they're all sending little emojis and the happy dance on the phone. So thank you. They were excited for that opportunity and they were holding their breaths. And we want to say thank you for all of that. As you heard Alex say today, today is May the 3rd is National Teacher Appreciation Day. It's a day for honoring teachers and recognizing the lasting contributions that teachers have made in all of our lives. All of us know a teacher, a counselor, a coach, a librarian, or somebody in education who has made a difference. So we hope that when we remember that, we can all be that same person in somebody else's life. But I also wanted to take a moment and tell you today is National Foster Care Day. And we want to show support for our foster youth everywhere. There are 400,000 children in foster care system. And at any given time, a new child enters into foster care every 2 minutes. Foster children youth have an uphill battle with staggering stats to overcome, and Delta has an amazing program for them, and we welcome them, and I want to salute our program and our foster youth students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have comments from the Peace Officers Association? Not hearing any. Comments from Dr. Aguilera Lawrenson.
Good evening, everyone. First, I just would like to congratulate all of the faculty who've received awards and recognition tonight. I truly wish there were more awards that we could give to faculty, because every day faculty are doing amazing things to really reach out and support our students in small ways and big ways. And so I really am happy to see that Delta had a clean sweep there on the awards. So congratulations to all. That's really exciting. When I heard that happened, it just made me feel very, very proud as a faculty. And that's amazing on top of everything else that you've had time amidst this COVID teaching, transition, et cetera, and everything we've been going through to do this additional work. So much congratulations.
And again, to Coach Johnson, amazing work. And ditto to what everybody said, especially with the academic success of your students. I think that's absolutely amazing. I also want to put out a special thanks to Dr. Vicki Nicholson and also to Julian Ligioso for their work on the SRP for us too. It was a lot of work that happened behind the scenes in HR and in fiscal to make that work for this evening. So I do want to thank them. And Dr. Nicholson is no longer with us and because she's gone back to her retirement life, speaking of retirement, but I wanted to acknowledge her hard work on behalf of the institution. She worked tirelessly, I should say, to provide support for HR to us. And I guess the other thing I would like to mention is the certificate ceremony. Congratulations to all of the students. I really enjoyed giving them their certificates and looking into their eyes and just seeing the excitement, the pride that they had. I asked how many of them were the first in their families to attend college, and almost all of them raised their hands. It was a huge moment for them. I was really happy to see that Delta College celebrates these students. I know that other districts, when budget cuts happen, they cut those ceremonies. I think it's incredibly important to provide that acknowledgement to those students and to hear their stories. And the student speaker was amazing. So that's all for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The board's now going to adjourn to closed session to discuss employment of the superintendent president. If there's any action taken tonight, we will be reporting that out at the end of the meeting. And we will report out any action taken prior to the adjournment of tonight's public meeting. So with that, the board is in a closed session. We're reconvening to public session. All of the trustees were present during the entirety of the discussion in item 12A. There is no reportable action, and our meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Good night.